Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Morning, chap. Sorry for the late voice note. Everything with long bus journey, all got a bit rushed off with time, so apologies for that. But yeah, yesterday was... It was an incredible day, really. It was like, you don't really get many opportunities to, I guess, have the front row seat to watch the two boys, two potentially best GC riders of this generation, try and battle it out for a win. So yeah, from that point of view, it was quite a good experience, but it's also a good experience for myself, you know, personally getting stuck in, and challenging for a stage win. It's, yeah, it's been a long time sort of trying to get here, really. Been quite a up and down path to this point, so it's good to know it's sort of finally all sort of coming to some good. But yeah, so woke up this morning a bit tired, a bit sore, but hopefully get the first hour under my belt today and yeah, play it by ear. Don't go too hard and save legs for later on in the race.
So that was the voice of James Shaw getting the podcast off to a flying start. But the quote of the day, other than James Shaw's excellent contribution just now, came from Marcel Kittel, the winner of 14 stages on the Tour de France, the winner already of the hair. He's probably born that way, with a full head of German golden hair in perfect array.
Came out of the womb.
Like that.
Like that.
But maybe not quite that big.
No, his hair.
Yeah, his hair, no, exactly, on a baby.
Yes.
Just like perfectly, like shaved at the side, but standing up nicely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good volume, never out of place.
Absolutely fantastic volume. But his his line, he just won the day by, just as you guys were rehearsing to do the top of the live show today, he was just getting a microphone put on for his debut on ITV, etc., etc. He turned to you, Pete, and you were looking your usual suave self, although... You upped the shirt game a little bit today, didn't you?
Yeah.
Talk us through that. What was the thinking there?
I don't know. When you're on set every day, it's nice to mix it up a bit, I guess. And the last couple of days, I've gone T-shirt because it's felt quite relaxed.
Yeah.
And there's a time and a place for a shirt. And the time and the place was today, as Marcel Kittel arrived.
Focuses the mind when Marcel... By the way, I should point out he's not in the car, which is slightly disappointing, because he will be tomorrow. But he's got another job. He's multi-jobbing, and he's with Dutch television at the moment, who he's been working for.
So what does he do now then?
He's doing an after show.
Oh, like where they sit down and do that kind of evening analysis around like a wooden desk.
He's a legend, because he's German, and the two television stations he's working for at the Tour de France, he broadcasts in Dutch, and I can tell it's highly unusual for any Germans to learn Dutch. But his wife is Dutch and he lives in the Netherlands, and he's learnt Dutch, which is just really anomalous and deeply impressive.
And deeply annoying.
And he, let's get all this out of the way before he actually joins us in the car, how much we resent him. But anyway, go back to the killer line. So there you were, all rehearsing. He turned to you. You were wearing your upgraded shirt, which was like white and quite, given the sweltering conditions, quite thick. Ambitiously thick.
Yeah, almost... That's like an off-white sort of champagne-y colour.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a little bit of champagne in there. But you were looking, you know, champagne
dashing,
quality.
Yeah.
Did you buy it from the same shop as the socks?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, the socks were...
Tell us about the socks.
They're a French brand. How do you pronounce it?
Egg.
Like the jackets in there were like 400 quid.
But Aigle is where the UCI headquarters are.
Yeah, that's Swiss.
Maybe they're not French.
Swiss French, yeah. Egg.
Pretty cool brand, actually. Like, really cool sort of, I don't know, winter type anoraks with all different colours, like quite out there. And I was looking at them anyway, because you asked for socks. So I was like, right, I've got to get in some socks.
Well, you went off to get some snacks. One of which you've just had, and some crisps.
Yeah, because I get really hungry when I get in the car.
Early on in the day, this was.
And
you said to the group.
Walking with my pass.
Well, you said to the group, sorry, anyone want anything? I'm going to get some snacks. And I went, yeah, socks, please. Which was challenging for you, obviously. Like, difficult.
Yeah, in the heat as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, found this shop, walking with my accreditation on. I'm like snooping around, like, almost, I don't know if it's because we went to the restaurant the other night, which was in the Michelin star guide. The woman who was working at the shop came up to me like I was of some importance.
Which you are.
You are, Pete.
But she didn't know in which sense you're important.
In her broken sort of English, like, are you looking to write a report on our shop?
Yeah.
And I was like, beg your pardon? Yeah. No, I'm just here to buy socks for a mate.
Well, opportunity missed there.
That was an opportunity missed. Massively. You could have seized that.
You've got to remember the heat, the stress of finding socks. I wasn't on my A game.
And the sheer unexpectedness of the question.
Yeah.
What would David have said?
We.
Given his improvisational skills that he's demonstrated almost every single day and his sheer shamelessness and brazen sort of approach, David, you would totally have gone for that, wouldn't you?
I'd have also written a story about the shop.
Well,
you would have.
Yeah.
Well, so it's quite sincere then.
Yeah.
I'd have done.
Yeah, I am a reporter, and I'm here to write the report.
Can I have some sample products, please?
Sample products. Yeah. Some
socks would be great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was, like I said, hot. I was sweaty. I was dressed in this type of palm tree sort of out there t-shirt.
Yeah.
I was actually sweating in their shop as well. So I just wanted to get in and out, basically. So, and then they were like, do you want it gift wrapping? Do you want this fancy bag? I was like, no, just the socks, no receipt.
You should have said it's only Ned.
I literally said I just want the socks for a mate. And got out there. So that was that. Yeah.
Oh, but they were great socks. And I think they were, you haven't admitted how much they cost, but I'm guessing they were a substantial price point. And you've actually just, I said I'll pay back, and you've said it's an early birthday present. And then we hugged it out, and that was amazing. And then I pulled the socks on, and there is nothing finer in the world, because I was quite footsore, than, you know, pulling some brand new high quality socks on. I just think it's a wonderful feeling. And the next time you pull them on when they're slightly second hand is never quite as good.
Never
is
the
it?
Same, no.
Why is that, David? You understand fabric and
I don't know. I think a lot of it's just kind of psychosomatic. I think they feel, I don't think they ever get that elasticity and freshness of fabric again, do they?
No.
It's something, and I think it's just because new socks. Well, you said about Elton John, didn't you?
Yeah. I think ever since he got money, which is a long time ago, and he was a young man when he started to earn big money, he's never worn the same pair of socks twice.
What?
There you go. Yeah. So he knows.
It's not a sustainable habit.
No.
But it's he can do it, and he's done it.
Not unless he's put them in the clothing bank.
Just unnecessary, isn't it, really?
Well, but anyway, he's providing socks for people who don't have them.
So we're sitting in comms, and Ned's got his new fresh socks on, and we're watching Marcel Kittel come on set, and the whole thing was just brilliant.
Oh, sorry, so I haven't got to his killer line.
Yeah.
So he looks over to you, and you're wearing your champagne-coloured, upgraded, I'm standing next to Marcel Kittel shirt, which I can totally understand. Gary also is, well, there was some, well, no, I won't go into that, but there was this moment where Cadell, see, old habits die hard, don't they? Brother Cadella, we've moved on. We haven't really moved on. We're just, it's different. But anyway, so where was I? Marcel turns up, and he's wearing, by now he's changed into his TV shirt, and it's black.
No, it's navy blue.
Oh, really? Look black on the telly.
Yeah, navy blue. Because when I first seen him in his white T-shirt, I was like, all right.
Casual.
I rate it, actually.
You're like, I've won. Yeah. This is good.
Well, I kind of rated it because I didn't expect it. I was like,
it's just wearing plain white t-shirts.
This is how he rolls.
Yeah, yeah. And you thought, did you at that point think you might downgrade your shirt?
I was committed. No way.
Yeah. Too deep in. But anyway, he's changed into this dark, very dark navy blue, ink blue, I would say, shirt with a little bit of a collar, very lightweight, appropriate to the sweltering weather conditions in Bordeaux. And he's unbuttoned it two buttons down, but he's toying. His dilemma is, he's got a couple of minutes to going live. How do I unbutton the third button? And he turns to you and he says, and he asks you that question, what should I do here with the buttons? Do you think one button more is too much for the British public? I actually said that. It was brilliant.
I was already smouldering next to him.
Yeah,
presence.
Yeah. You were just calling for kitchen roll to wipe your face with at that point. Were. Yeah. It was horribly hot in Bordeaux today. Yeah. The last time I was in Bordeaux on the full stop was with the Tour de France when Cav won in 2010. Exactly the same zone technique, exactly the same finish line. And I remember after.
Do you ever start to question life at that point when it's just the same?
All the time, Pete.
Like, here we go again.
But I question it, and the answer I get every time is, this is brilliant.
Oh, right. Because I was a bit like that, David, in the latter part of my career. Where you get to the point where, you know, you go to
Groundhog Day,
San Sebastian, or you go to Catalonia, and it's almost the same stage. And it's like, is this it?
I hear you, Pete. Yeah. And it was it.
Yeah.
But that's just, you know, name me a job where, like, even President of the United States of America, you'd go and walk into the Oval Office and, you know,
another day in the office.
Another, you know, what's happening? Well, the world's on fire. Oh, again? That was Wednesday last week. You know, we're all going to get a bit like that in every single job, aren't we? Unless you're Elon Musk, where you just do mad stuff every day. Just to kind of like, you know. And I think we get away with it a bit in this job.
Yeah, because no tour that I've done has been the same on this, like, in this role. Because we were talking about that the other night, how, well, I brought it up. I was like, you almost, you know, year after year, you can't predict what's going to happen, whether it be the restaurants after the stage, whether it's a pizza on the side of the road, whether it's a hot tub with Cadell Evans.
Yeah.
And you almost think you should be able to be like, oh, yeah. But that, each year surprises us.
And that's the reason why the really disappointing hotels and sort of like, oh, we're staying there. Sometimes when you are destined to go to a really beautiful place like Aix-en-Provence or Avignon, you're really looking forward to that, and then you look at the actual hotel and you realize you're on the ring road and you're a B&B hotel with no restaurant, and anyway you're arriving too late for it to be. So those sort of hammer blows to morale, they're acceptable because you know that somewhere down the line very soon an unexpected pleasure is coming.
Gem of a hotel. With that, Ned, they can almost sometimes offer up the best memories.
What, the
for
rubbish
one
nights,
reason or another.
The rubbish nights, yeah. Absolutely. It's very unpredictable.
I just, before we go to the bike race.
Oh, we're going to go to the bike race.
I was really, really pleased with myself because you were making some kind of clarifications on rivers during commentary, weren't you?
I embarrassed myself.
And then you started waxing lyrical about the sheer size of the water element in Bordeaux.
Yeah. And I named the wrong river.
Yeah. And I said, that's why it's called Bordeaux.
Yes.
And you were like, oh.
Yeah.
Go on.
Well, Bord means, Bord is the bank.
Okay.
And O is water.
Oh.
So it's the bank, it's the Bordeaux means the edge of the water.
Well,
the border of the water.
Slightly different, but similar. And I don't know if there's other towns or villages in like named the same, but the capital of the Isle of Man, Douglas, is because the River Dee and the River Glass meet.
No
way.
Yeah.
So it's got nothing to do with a chap called Douglas who founded it or anything? No. Dougie.
No, are you taking the mic now? Is
no,
that?
No. Oh, okay. I've never stopped and thought about it, to be fair. Okay. But I'd always like thought
the River
Dee
and the River Glass.
Or, well, chicken or the egg, was the town called Douglas after somebody called Douglas and they thought, we've got the two rivers here, what are we going to call them?
Yeah. And then the name comes from the island.
I can 100% say that the rivers were there first.
Hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's definitely true.
David's just winding me up.
Oh,
yeah. I don't know. What's going on? Are there loads of other towns like that we're not aware of?
Yeah, most.
Probably.
Yeah. Plymouth.
River Plym and the River Uff.
Well, that's an interesting one because it's the mouth of the River Plym, so it should have a double M, really.
Okay.
It should be Plymouth, but it doesn't.
We're going deep today, aren't we? Yeah.
Well, it started well. But you know the thing that you're saying about your granddad and his Masonic tendencies?
Mm-hmm.
I just want to see all these little trinkets one day. I absolutely want to see them. I'm going to have to come to the Isle of Man just for that reason.
Mm.
They just sound fascinating. But I was thinking about that today because, again, and this goes back to the unbroadcast bit of the live show when Gary was kind of talking to Marcel. And I don't know, because I was kind of making my last minute notes and I was only had half an eye on what was being said on the set. But the whole design of the Manx flag got mentioned. I don't know why. And Gary had to explain to Marcel that
Was it Phil Liggett? He's almost riding like with three legs today.
Was that the context of why it got raised?
I think so, yeah. Which is, yeah, everyone's third leg is, we don't need to go into that, but that's why it was funny, I guess.
Yeah, and then, but then Gary explained to Marcel that the symbol of the Isle of Man is the three legs.
And he was just like, and?
Was he?
Yeah. I was like, and? Oh.
Okay, that's interesting.
Very good.
Yeah.
Before the race started,
yeah,
I was really disappointed.
Why is it three legs?
Do you want it?
Yeah, I do want to know.
Do you know?
Because, well, the sort of motto of the three legs is, whichever way you throw me, I shall land on my feet.
No.
That's good.
That's amazing.
That's really good. Like a cat. Yeah. Could have had a cat on there.
A cat? Like a cat?
Yeah, well, there's a Manx cat, but...
Yeah, it's hasn't got a tail. Yeah,
hasn't got legs on its back. Eight like a cat with no tail.
Well, just one, yeah. Just one leg underneath it. One leg coming out of its head.
360
and one
legs.
Leg growing out of its back. Yeah. Whoa, that's a strange cat. How does it eat? What does it eat?
Does it sometimes walk upside down?
Imagine it running downstairs. It would just like go,
just like, roll,
just roll,
just roll. Like a little springy thing. But yeah, on Manx. So, but this is the first time I've seen you guys. We asked. So before the stage started, do we think Mark Cavendish is going to do it today? Yeah. And you were both had an air of no.
Yeah, I said Philipson.
I was so disappointed in that.
Who?
Well, Pete. Well, there's a slight difference between Pete on air and off air today, wasn't there?
Was it?
Yeah, you were asked for your prediction. Gary, he doesn't often do that, actually, Gary.
No, but, yeah, I've said from the offset that I'm going to say he's going to win every day because we're putting positive vibes into the universe.
Correct.
So and I said it on set. Right.
You did, emphatically. I was quite surprised, actually. You just went, yeah, totally feel
it. Yeah, because you then pulled up with David about the...
Making predictions.
We don't do that on... Yeah, we don't do that, do we, David?
Have you not learned? Have you not learned? Learn on, son. although I'm quietly confident about my Jonas Vingegaard will never win another Tour de France. But that's for another day.
You love pulling these ones out the back.
anyway, yeah.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Race got underway. Wout van Aert attack, didn't he, David?
False attack. False attack.
False flag.
Yeah. He. But you know what? It's tongue-in-cheek, but at the same time, I bet it put the fear of God up a lot of people, which I guess was his point.
It's quite,
I don't know. It's almost, it's passive aggressive.
Yeah, it was a funny one.
I mean, was it funny for anyone? You know what I mean? It's like, oh God, no.
Well, it was quite, what happened then was, so he attacked as he has done the last 2 days.
Yeah.
You know, on a day where obviously he's not going to attack, he attacked and it lasted 7 pedal strokes. But it was enough. It was enough. For like a dozen riders get strung out behind him, you know, like, oh, no, we're on again. And then, well, obviously made it clear that it wasn't on again. But they kind of like, and then that cold wave subsided. And then 4 riders dutifully got up the road. And they were, just to name check them. Can I do that without referring to my notes? Abrahamsen, Tobias Abrahamsen, I think that's his name, from Uno X. It was Mathieu Bourgaudoux, it was Nelson Oliveira of Movistar, and it was Simon Guglielmi of Arkea Samsic. But it was Abrahamsen who, like, almost instantly got called back by his radio. Once they, because straight away they shut that down, and Uno X got on the radio and went, hello guys, how do they speak? The Uno X DS is doing a little bit Scandi. Guys?
It's a tough one.
Just go Universal. Okay.
Well, yeah, a little bit more like this, maybe. Yeah, a little bit more. Okay, we see now the breakaway.
Back to the belt now.
Yeah. Okay, it's not a day for a break.
Very hard to do.
Conserve. I think I'm doing it right here. Conserve your energy. We have a big day tomorrow. Many, many days on Tour de France still to come. This is not a day for you. Okay, come back. Oh, no, I'm losing it. come back. So he dropped back straight away, and that left three. And you could see the indecision already sort of like seeping through that group. And then Nelson Oliveira, who's a really seasoned and you know, really experienced pro from Movistar, and a Grand Tour stage winner at the Vuelta. He knows what he's doing, Nelson Oliveira. He just went, actually, wait a minute. If Uno X have called their rider back, what am I doing here from Movistar?
At least they'd be doing something.
Well, there is that. But it was just not a day to be in the break. So off he pops. And that left Mathieu Bourgodeau, who briefly got on the front and then got on the back. And then Guglielmi looked around to see what Bourgodeau was doing. Bourgodeau shook his head and then dropped away. And Guglielmi was committed, David.
But you know what? With hindsight, was it? It could have possibly been a really good day for the break if they'd Vaucluré'd it the first half of the race.
Right.
If they'd just like sat at 2 minutes right until 40Ks to go, and then just, or 50K, and just put the hammer down with four of them with that tailwind.
They had a chance.
It would have been close.
I mean, it was. That's a hindsight thing, isn't it?
Yes. 2020 and all that.
But you've got a really good point. But you would have needed a fighting force of four or five there.
Strange sprinting race, because you got like Lotto Destiny working, doing the early work.
Yep.
Quickstep.
Yeah.
Alpecin
were working,
but it's like Lotto Destiny and Quickstep just nowhere to be seen after with 40k to go. Well, yeah. No, less than that. Sorry, 15.
Yeah.
K to go.
Yeah.
And then it's like, there's, in terms of the breakaway, maybe.
But
if you get just together and sort of,
yeah, just to elaborate pre-plan on that point, it's a really good point, David. They could have done with a few more hills. I mean, it was rolling terrain towards the end, but it wasn't quite hilly enough. But the wind, it was all about the wind, and it was about the change in wind direction after the intermediate sprint that was in the middle, where they picked up this raging hot tailwind for pretty much the rest of the stage. And that was the tactic that Pierre Latour, I don't know if Nans Peters was engaged in that. I think it was Latour's tactic. And Nans Peters was just along for the ride, to be honest. But they'd clearly looked at that moment and gone, this would be actually possibly a thing. But because, they got across to Guglielmi through the sprint. And then...
Wow.
And normally sneezes come in threes as well. So I'm bracing myself for the next two.
No, that's it. Done. Sorry.
But David, it was kind of cool because they just rode with Guglielmi, didn't they? And the gap was like 30 seconds and it was all a bit da-da-da-da-da. Yeah. Then they got to the climb at 40k to go or something like that. And Latour just smashed it suddenly on the climb, and the gap went from 30 to a minute. And also his teammates suddenly appeared at the front of the peloton to kind of disrupt the reaction. And that's when we suddenly started to think, oh, hang on, this might be quite smart.
Mm.
But two riders weren't quite enough.
They weren't. And Tim de Klerk and what's his name? Who was the other guy?
It was Dries Devenins.
Dries Devenins.
Yeah, guys, you need to work now.
Yeah.
Guys, we need to go because these guys are flying tailwind all the way. Huh?
Important to be around there, Caleb.
Yeah.
All together in the front. Really? Yeah. Anything useful?
Yeah. Oh, team radio was funny.
It excelled today, didn't it?
Oh.
Bottles.
Bottles.
Yeah. Stay at the front.
Steve's
going to get narrow.
Yeah.
Don't know when.
Oh, yeah. That was.
Oh, it's going to get narrow.
Yeah, it was getting narrow. That was Lotto Destiny.
Yeah.
DSM were. Okay, if you want bottles, put your hand in the air.
When you get to the back, put your hand in the air.
For one, Jesus. I want to hear more motivational
speaking
from the directors. It's just like, I don't know if they're saying it and we're not hearing it or getting it on the TV, but come on. It's like,
you're great at that.
There's
in the
so
car,
much
Pete.
You can do.
You're great at that.
Pete's been Netflix without being on Netflix. Pete is Netflix without being on Netflix.
When it matters, like.
He's TikTok.
He's just.
He is. Oh, he literally TikTok, is TikTok.
Yeah. 5 million views.
Like. Five?
Yeah.
Jesus.
God, dear.
It's changed your life, Pete.
No.
No.
Is it not?
No.
Okay. For those of you who don't know, there is a viral video on TikTok that we discussed on this podcast some months ago, but I gather a lot more of you are listening to this podcast during the Tour de France. You know, we've got like fair weather, Never Strays Far listeners, and we've got the hardcore. And the hardcore stay with us through thick and thin.
Thick and thin.
Sometimes on dodgy internet Zoom links in February where there's not much to say. You know, we love you guys. Yeah. Oh, and also, we've got a reward for you that would actually end up rewarding us, David, in the sense that the merch. Do you want to just talk about the merch?
Yeah, the merch is nearly online. I think perhaps even tomorrow. We'll check. I'll check once we get to the hotel. But yeah, we have a new range inspired by Ned and Pete's universal language, and a little homage to the Tour de France.
Yeah, it is basically a t-shirt which celebrates the famous universal language phrase, the ultimate universal language phrase. It's normally, which is the reason it's so brilliant is because, as we've discussed over the last 20 minutes or whatever, nothing at the Tour de France is normal. So to summarize the Tour de France with a phrase, it's normal is a jarring oxymoron. Sprint. Let's fast forward to the sprint. Well, yeah. First of all, you did a 360, David.
I did a 360.
I'm David Miller.
Here's that was your 360.
Yeah.
I'm Peter Kenyuk. He's David Miller.
Yeah.
And there's your 360.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, we can thank the ITV production editing team for cutting together our little brilliant recon from yesterday and making people believe you made it to the top, Pete. Because my wife was shocked, Nicole, who's listening, was shocked that you didn't make it.
Well,
and I had to explain to her what had happened.
They did well there. Yeah. Our good friend.
How did they convince...
Well,
the
you know,
without showing Pete at the top, that sounds unlikely. How did they do that in television?
Well, because then they cut the, you know, the bookended bit that we pre-recorded.
Yeah, the cheeky bit.
I think people thought that was kind of at
real.
The top. Yeah,
yeah. Because our good friend Matt Rendell and obviously colleague was like, but they cut you out. They cut you. It was great. It was great, but they cut you out. I was like, I just didn't
was
do
that
the last 5K.
Was that your Matt Rendell impression?
Oh, I can do better.
Do the last 5K.
I love Matt, so. I literally was not there for like the most important part of the 360.
Pete, I saw, and they cut you out. So how did your 360 go?
Yeah, it went well, apart from just constant technical issues and having to go back and forth. And again, I did the whole thing where I kind of, you know, the first attempt you get it right normally because it's just raw and you're just going through it. And I thought, you know what, today this isn't long. It's only 3Ks. The file will hold it. And I hit record just inside. It was battling again through barriers and people and police. Saw that it was just under 4Ks to go. Took it all the way to the finish line. Did my rap at the end. Looked down to turn it off, and it was already off.
Oh.
And then I could never get it right again. And so it took me like 4 or 5 goes to kind of get it right, and I was just...
And for me, there's nothing more humiliating when you're on the side of the road of like K and a half to go, 3 hours before the race comes, and there's quite a few fans there already,
yeah.
And you're going over what you're going to say in your head, and they're just looking at you like, what's he doing? It's like, if only you knew. I'm about to record a 360 that might even not go on air. That's what I'm doing with my time right now. And I'm sweating and I'm tired. And I've got to commentate in 20 minutes.
Yeah, so it went well. Saw the finish. It was technical. And I did, at that point, they still hadn't moved to 3K to 3.6K, the 3K rule, because you came kind of flying around this right-hander into 3Ks to go, which seemed incredibly dangerous. Because it meant all the sprinters and GC teams would be going around that corner together, which I ended up doing anyway. And like Vingegaard was totally... It's amazing how Vingegaard is like so perfectly positioned, like at the motor racing circuit. Him and Christophe Laporte were just chilled, like going through 3Ks to go and into... And Christophe Laporte was like, come on, guys, come round me.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I'm pretty good at that.
Was it a little bit notable that Jumbo-Visma opted to do nothing today in the sprint? Like Laporte...
Well, yeah, because Laporte Van Aert just set up.
Yeah. And the last time they've done that in a sprint and just not been in it was in the Champs-Élysées last year when they were just celebrating the overall victory. Other than that, they always try something. So that's like a little bit, okay. They've reverted to kind of, this is...
Full GC.
This is full GC now. They've gone a bit Ineos on that, in that regard, maybe. Don't know.
Yeah, unless Wout van Aert's got his eyes on... He's had a hectic and hard... like, look at the last couple of days, you know?
He's done a bit.
Maybe he's thinking tomorrow.
Yeah. Tomorrow's a little bit lumpy. Yeah. I'm going to claim maybe potentially a 0.0001% contribution to Mark Cavendish's sprint today. Only because I walked in from our hotel along the last couple of kilometres and I thought, I'm not sure, because you hadn't discussed going and doing a 360, Pete. I didn't know whether you were going to go out, get the time, or had been asked to go out and actually do your... Because we discussed it on the pod the other day, how you sometimes send Mark...
No, if you're looking to sort of, you know, edge me out and be his intel, that's fine.
Well, he's offered, yeah, it's quite good money that, you know. So I sent Mark a little thing about they dipped under a bridge with the K to go and then up and out of the bridge and then the cobbles. And I think there were some cobbles with 500 metres to go. They're quite, actually, they weren't just totally smooth. And and I sent him a picture of that. And at that point, I think Cav went, oh, hang on, this is exactly the same running as I won in on 2010. So he did know that. And he has got this ridiculous photographic memory. And David, let's be honest, I think both you and I, and Pete, I know you weren't in the commentary booth at the time, but you're watching on, waiting to do your live studio. There was a point in that sprint where I think all of us thought he's won it.
Yeah, there was. And I think what was remarkable about it was like a K before, he looked completely out of it. He was so far back and kind of only had Case ball, and he's not the sort of rider that can get him back up there. So it was all the more surprising when all of a sudden with 500 metres to go, he was up there. Yeah. And it was like, it all played out.
Well, I got asked to talk for the final 800 metres and on Cav, and I literally couldn't see him until like 400 metres to go.
He's not in the helicopter shot, is he?
So close, wasn't it? Well, it was and it wasn't. It was like...
Yes, it was and it wasn't. Yep.
There was just that brief... Honestly, we were like jumping up and down onto it. And it would have gone off if he had won.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone wants it. Even Phillipson almost wants it.
No, he doesn't.
No, he does. He does want Cav to take that record. No,
he said it would be... he said, we all want to see it.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, all right.
No, he
yeah,
said it with a really not, nice... Not, I'd like yes, to see... No, he did say I'd like to see him win.
A lovely yeah. thing to say, but yeah. not at the expense of a Phillipson victory.
No, sorry, I didn't yeah. mean that. Yeah. But I mean, like, everyone at home watching, a large part of the peloton would love to be a part of the Tour de France.
On the day it happens.
On the day that someone takes Eddie Merckx's record.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, hats off to Phillipson because... He was brilliant today, wasn't he? I think of the three wins, actually, that was almost the best.
That was the best, he was yeah. so kind so of good. Kept it so together, calm. Didn't he? When Mathieu van der Poel did as usual, but it kind of ran out a bit too early. It was like at 350 metres to go, it was stalling. And nobody wanted a sprint because there was nobody else left, no lead out. So they were all watching Phillipson. And there was that momentary pause or lull. And that's when Mark was just carried his speed, yeah. didn't wait. And kind of just took the initiative, which he said he wished he'd done in Nogaro at the motor racing circuit, that he wished he'd gone earlier. And it's like, it's classic Cav, he kind of learns from his mistakes and then just applies it almost immediately. Such a shame the old Shimano let him down, though. That's rare.
I love the way you named the brand there, David.
Well, no, because I'll name SRAM when they...
You do. Yeah, no, I remember years ago interviewing yeah. you once when your Mavic wheel had exploded.
Oh, yeah, that was bad.
That was because you got a neutral service. Yeah. yeah, what was that, in a time trial or something?
My rear disc like just ripped to pieces on the start ramp. Then they gave me another one, and this same thing happened.
This is a long time ago on the Tour de France, and I did an ITV interview with David. And you just like in the space of about 30 seconds, you used the word Mavic 3 times. My Mavic wheel, just my Mavic's on me.
Yeah, it was very nice to me.
Yeah.
Nothing beats the chain dropping story though from David, does it?
Well, that's iconic.
Iconic.
That's an iconic story.
Or the snap chain.
Yeah. Oh, is it snap? Snap chain.
Yeah. Or the front radio.
Oh, yeah. Oh, when you walk.
Yeah.
When you walked your general manager over to onto
that one.
Said, "Look,
that's a problem.
That's my favourite story."
Yeah. 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 Old Brian Cockar, he's going all right.
Where did he finish in the end?
Oh, top 10.
Oh.
But that's all right.
Is it?
I don't know why I've got my eye on him this tour.
And because you do that with...
Yeah, you
with
do. He's supposed to replace Guillaume Martin. Is he even here, Guillaume Martin?
He is even here, David, but that's all he is. He's even here at
the
moment.
Paddy Bevins?
Paddy Bevin.
I've almost forgotten about Paddy Bevin. He's done much this year, has he?
No.
What's going on there? but no, the old Cockar, I've got my eye
on. He's a hipster choice for you. You love a hipster, don't you?
No, I invested in him because tomorrow... Or today, if you're listening to this tomorrow, or even in the past, if you're listening to this in 2 weeks' time, we collectively, we're all going to, well, we're going there now, for heaven's sake, we're on the motorway. We're going to Limoges. And uh, in, in, oh, I don't know the year.
2 weeks time, we'll have already been there. I don't know the year. Be over, but yeah.
I'm going to say 20. I don't know the year. 2013, 2014. Marcel Kittel and Brian Coquard sprinted to the line in Limoges, and it was one of the closest photo finishes in the history of the tour, and it took a long time for them to decide which of the two had won. Marcel Kittel was the last rider before Jasper Philipsen to win the first three stages of the Tour de France, and that was in 2014. I don't know why I've just gone all statistical all of a sudden. It's not really in our nature and never strays far, but yeah.
No.
Yeah. So it was, I don't know, it was very close, wasn't it? But then, it, like you say, it wasn't close.
You got excited afterwards in the zone technique.
Oh, that was,
and you triggered, you were kind of almost the kind of the patient zero on that one, in a sense.
So there's a truck in the middle of the zone technique that is a truck apart. It's very different. And it's quite interesting that it just sits there in the middle of the media compound.
I've never seen Ned move so quickly.
So it was old school journalist Ned,
oh,
on point, rallying the troops,
well,
encouraging them to go and pay attention.
What, is it you pointed them out at first? The two Astana bikes?
I did, and you were gone.
So you noticed that next to the UCI's little van there were two Astana bikes that actually belonged to Gianni Moscon and someone else. Don't know who their number eight is, off the top of my head. But anyway, I went over there and I suddenly saw Vinokourov was there. And then I noticed that some of the staff from Intermarché Circus Wanty were there, and there were a little small smattering of Belgian journalists there, and clearly something was going on behind closed doors in the little UCI video booth that they have there, where the commissaires gather to kind of do the VAR thing. And then it emerged that Intermarché had lodged an appeal because Biniam Gramay, who produced a great sprint, by the way, a fabulous ride from him today, was slightly hampered by Jasper Philipsen. I think that's safe to say. But these are all shades of grey, aren't they?
And I don't think he was.
Not at all. I think he was a bit, but not enough.
By saying that, I mean,
he wasn't going to win.
No, I don't think he was hampered.
At all. Well, then you might as well be a UCI commissaire, because that's the conclusion that they ultimately reached. But for a little moment, there was this sense that, oh, because if they find against Jasper Philipsen having done an illegal move on Biniam Gurumay, then he would be relegated, and that would hand Mark Cavendish stage win number 35.
If he was, then you might as well start the sprinters in a lane, like a 100-meter sprint,
yeah,
with 200 meters to go, and say,
yeah,
go.
Yeah,
because then it's not even bike racing anymore.
Yeah, but nonetheless, I think there is a due process there, and I think it's probably a good thing that these things get looked at. But I agree they've reached the right decision on that. But anyway, for about half an hour, and then Vino turned up, didn't he, David? And all of a sudden,
he was looking fantastic.
He was looking quite good,
wasn't he? Yeah. He looks just so exactly like
Alexander Vinokourov,
like Alexander Vinokourov, but kind of almost like a Bond villain as well.
Yeah.
Doesn't he?
And it's a long time since I've seen him, sort of like, and you know, it took me back to my days of interviewing him in his slightly hesitant of heavily accented French. And it was just interesting to eavesdrop on him, you know, kind of like talking to the journalist in his Bond villain French. But it was like a bit of an old school bundle suddenly developed. And
yeah, you were getting so excited.
Crews were arriving from everywhere. I saw a Danish camera person just running over from their truck, and all of a sudden the Netflix crew were there. Yeah, just like all over it and everything. But it would have been had it happened, it would have been an awful way for Cavendish to have broken the record. So in a way, well, the right decision was met, but also kind of in every other sense, the right decision remained. And Philipsen is an absolute weapon, and it's brilliant. You know, that's what happens. You've got to beat him to get this record, and it's going to be very, very hard, I think. It's going to be hard. And I posited this theory to both of you that, you know, psychologically, I don't know how you feel about this, but as a human, because Cavendish, even though we question it at times, he's a peculiar type of human as well, and a fascinating human, but he is a human. If he'd just finished third, and improving third, but not actually close to taking the win, would that be easier for him to kind of like digest and to think forward with? He was so close to victory today that having that snatched away from him by the brilliance of Philipsen, that in a way it could be harder for him to overcome, David, or is he just so nails that he's just going to get on?
I don't know. I mean, I guess it's proper mixed emotions, because he will have had a few seconds there where he thought it was game on. But I think also maybe not, because his gear was already jumping before. So I think there's going to be a lot of, how would I put it, almost grieving. Like, yeah. And you just got to not let that go. Well, maybe, because he knows it's going to be kind of stars aligning, him winning the sprint here. And in a way, the stars aligned today. Like, from how far he was back, Mathieu van der Poel, kind of his lead out dying quite a long way out, that little lull, him having that jump and going, I mean, that was the stars aligning. Everything was perfect.
This is kind of what I'm getting at.
Yeah, and so that's why he can't let that eat away at him. He's got to hope that the stars can align twice and that his gears don't jump around.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, quite weird to have just us three in the car again, isn't it, Pete?
Yeah.
Changes tomorrow when Marcel comes in.
Can't wait.
Front seat for Marcel, definitely.
Very good.
Yeah. Oh, easy.
Yeah. And if Cadell's listening, I don't know if he will. But
I don't think Brother Cadell listens.
You never know.
Brother Cadell, it's been wonderful to get to know. Fabulous hour that we spent in the hot pool together. We'll live long in the memory.
It's quite chill, isn't it?
Very chill. And
David continuing to be the Wout van Aert from our little crew.
Just doing everything.
Laundry.
Oh yeah, laundry.
Got
today,
laundry
then.
Done. That's a big weight off my shoulders.
Second time you've done laundry.
That's never happened in the history of the Tour de France.
No, that's unprecedented.
By anybody.
By anybody. No one's washed their clothes twice in 7 days.
Yeah. So I'm back to ground zero again.
We all went for a bit of a run, didn't we?
Did Pete's washing as well.
What?
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
I went for a run.
Yeah. I was just
going to
back
call me
run.
One day, and I'm not even going to be able to do 100 meters for you on the front with a chance of a stage run. Sorry, mate. Not today. Yeah, we went for a run. Well, we all did.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Me and David.
I wingmanned Pete. Got him out.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I just sat on your heels, didn't I?
You did.
I was so close.
Were you? You did just literally sat on my heels the whole time.
You were like, oh, do you want to go? Like, there was a massive cruise ship which was parked right on the finish line. Do you want to go to the cruise ship past it? I was like, listen, man, I'm just following you.
Yeah.
Or as I say, I'd say I'm just following you, bro, or something.
Did you run along that? Because there were multiple different
the
ways.
The planks.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you run along the planks?
Technical.
Very technical.
Technical.
And also, like, any minute now, I'm just going to fall through them. They were rotten,
weren't
they?
Some of them were
along
a
the River Garonne.
Soggy.
And, really? Like, and patched up, and, like, I couldn't wait to get off them, frankly. Mm. Very technical.
Yeah.
Funny you knew exactly what I was going to say there. Yeah. And up to the big cruise ship. And,
imagine you just didn't know the Tour de France was finishing and you were on that cruise ship.
Bonus.
Oh, they were just, because I went out a little bit earlier than you guys, when I ran past the cruise ship and on, they were just shelling out of the cruise ship and they got in my way. I had to pick my way through them. I was quite annoyed. American pensioners on their holiday and a sweaty British cycling tour commentator just getting annoyed with them. Slightly intolerant there. But I like Bordeaux.
Love Bordeaux from what I've seen.
Yeah.
Because I was quite surprised actually that I had no expectation. Had a little walk in to the centre, which was like 250 metres from our zone technique.
UNESCO World Heritage Site.
Is it?
It is.
Huh.
Yeah. Well, it's very intact, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you have to consider it's right over in the west, so it hadn't been ravaged in either of the wars. Wasn't particularly bombed, I don't think, Bordeaux in the Second World War. And it's, And the interesting point about it coming back to Bordeaux after such a long absence is that they have a green mayor these days. And the previous mayor, the incumbent of the mayoralty, if that's the right word, was quite opposed to bringing the Tour de France back. So the 81st occasion, which was today, is a result of the new mayor wanting to embrace the symbol of the bicycle and bring it back in the grandest possible form.
Not good on him.
Or her. I don't know who they are. and that's that. So we're heading to Limoges, which is just one of those Tour de France places. And that's that. We've run out of steam, haven't we? Yeah?
Yep.
Yeah, Pete?
Yeah.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.